I'm always awed by people who then come out 2 weeks before Pesach. And I'm more awed by people who are ready to open their homes 2 weeks before Pesach for a shiur. So, Javi, it's a delight to be here in your living room. And it's exciting to have some time to learn together before Pesach. I hope that this will enrich your Pesach or bring you maybe with some new ideas to the Seder. Sharon, thank you for the wonderful introduction, and I want to point something out and also issue an invitation. You'll see these flyers over here. Sometimes women say to me that, well, I think I missed the boat. My daughter, my younger sister, my niece are spending time learning, but I've never had the opportunity to sit in a Beit Midrash setting and learn how to, you know, plumb the depths of the text. So I want you to know it's for every woman, it's for you. There's an extraordinary 3-week program at Nishmat during the summer. You can come for less than 3 weeks. I was at a wedding yesterday and I heard that a number of women from Cleveland are planning to come this summer to Nishmat. There's learning on all levels, and it's Beit Midrash style learning. So there are some women who are Jewish studies teachers, and there are women who are beginners, and they're coming to learn this summer. Nina, I have my eyes on you. We're going to get you. I wish to invite everyone because it's an energizing experience. Nikki Katz, who's not with us this morning, has said to me, it's the kind of thing that carries you through the year. So I cordially invite you. I wanted to look at an aspect of Pesach Mitzrayim, of the Pesach sacrifice that was offered in Egypt, and raise a couple of questions and answer those questions by comparing Pesach Mitzrayim and Pesach Tulum. Let me start with one question which arises when we read the Haggadah. When you read, look at source number one. No, there isn't. I'm going to have to translate. But everyone should have a Tanakh nearby, and I think Javi has set out for us. Javi, where do we have extra Tanakh?
Right on the wine cooler.
Okay.
Okay. Just
We read in source number one in the Haggadah, Matzah zo she'anu ochlim al shum ma. Why do we eat this matzah? Al shum shelo hispik b'tzeikam shel avokeinu lahachmitz, ad shenigra lehem melech malchei hamlachim hakadosh baruch hu, uv'ya'alam miyad. Shene'emar v'yofu et habatzek asher hotzim ממצרים, ugot matzot ki lo chametz ki gorshu ממצרים v'lo yochlim mitmameya, וגם צידה לא עשו להם. Why do we eat this matzah? Why we eat this matzah? Because the dough of our forefathers did not sour before God revealed himself to them and redeemed them immediately. As it says, they baked the dough that they brought out of Egypt into matzah cakes and not chametz, because they were expelled from Egypt and they could not tarry, and they did not provision themselves. So the question I'd like to start off with is, wait just a minute. When they were eating the Pesach sacrifice in Egypt, they were eating it with matzah. Mm-hmm. Why did they eat matzah in Egypt? We eat matzah to commemorate the fact that their bread did not manage to sour, to leaven, when they went out of Egypt. But the night before, they were already eating matzah. Why were they eating matzah? So I want to look at that night. That's the question I want to begin with. But I want to look at that night and ask several questions about that night, because I think that there's an important message. So open up to Shmot Perek Yud-Bet, Shmot chapter 12. And you'll see it divides itself into what we call Pesach Mitzrayim and Pesach Dorot. If there's anyone who doesn't have the Tanakh, there are still a couple of more next to Tamar. Pesach Mitzrayim is the Pesach sacrifice that was offered in Egypt. Pesach Dorot is the Pesach sacrifice that we would be offering if the Mikdash were built today. I think, Wendy, we were speaking about this at your table on Shabbos Day, that we've just entered the book of Vayikra, and the book of Vayikra with its sacrifices presents a tremendous philosophical challenge to us, except for the Pesach sacrifice, which I think we're able to imagine because it has all of the components of a family festive celebration, and many of us are not vegetarians, and so we can easily imagine ourselves. Nikki, good morning. We just quoted you. Where are there some more seats?
I'm over here.
Thanks.
Okay. I think that of all of the sacrifices which are brought, the Pesach sacrifice, please pass this to the ladies who just came in. The Pesach sacrifice is the one that we can relate to. And I think we can easily conceive of ourselves sitting around in family groups or in groups of friends and celebrating the festive meal together with the Pesach sacrifice at the center. So the Pesach sacrifice sorts itself into what I said was called Pesach Mitzrayim and Pesach Dorot. Pesach Mitzrayim, the Pesach that was offered in Egypt had one set of rules, Pesach Dorot, the Pesach generations has another. Follow along with me in chapter 12, Shemot chapter 12, Perek Yud. ויאמר השם אל משה ואל אהרן בארץ מצרים לאמור החודש הזה לכם ראש חודשים ראשון הוא לכם לחודשי השנה. Actually, why am I reading? Who wants to read? Judy?
Oh, I'm volunteering myself, but okay. With an Ashkenazic accent.
And someone else is going to have to read the English.
Should I just translate it too?
If you want to, or else someone might be able to read the English.
Okay, you're up to.
And could someone pass? Nikki, do you have a chumash? Or
it's okay.
There's one right here if you want.
Read it. Okay. All right.
So we're up to Gimel, right?
Start again.
Oh, okay. Vayomer Hashem al Moshe vel Aaron be'eretz Mitzrayim l'emor. Hashem said to Moshe and Aaron, in the land of Israel to stay. In the land of Egypt, saying, you know, that they should say, HaChodesh HaZeh Lachem, Rosh Chodeshim, this month is for you the beginning of all the months. Rishon Hu Lachem L'Chadshei HaShana, it's the first of the month of all the months of the year. Davru El Kol Adas Yisrael, Lamor, speak to the whole community of Israel to say, Be'asor lachodesh hazeh, in the 10th of this month, you know, speak to them on the 10th of this month, Yichu lachem ish seh, v'veis avos seh labayis. Say that on the 10th of the month, each of them should take a lamb, you know, for each family,
for the household.
For each household. V'im gim'at habayis me'yos miseh, and if a household is too small for a lamb, in other words, there are too few people to eat a whole lamb, v'lokachu v'shichno hakarov el beso, he and his neighbor who lives nearby, v'michsas nachos ish l'fi achlo tachosu al haseh. It should be in proportion to the number of people. You should contribute for the lamb according to what each household will eat.
Refers to how many people need to be counted to eat the lamb. So you need to count. A child will count as capable of eating this much. An adult will count as capable of eating this much. And you count your people. And you count your people and thereby decide how many people together are going to eat the Korban Pesach. So there are two forms of organization that are given to us here. One is the group is constituted by what?
A whole household.
By family. Yeah. Household, of course, refers to the extended family. The extended family can eat together, and alternately, the neighbors.
Set hamim zachar ben shana yelachem. It should be a lamb without a blemish that's a year old.
A male.
Min hakfasim umin ha'izim tikachu. You may take it from the sheep or from the goats. V'hayolachem l'mishmeret, and it should be, you should keep watch over it, ad arba asar yom l'chodesh, until the 14th day of this month, ha'chodesh hazeh, sorry, this month, v'shachatu oso kol kahal adas Yisrael bein harabayim, and all of the B'nai Yisrael, all the congregation, should slaughter it at twilight. V'lachu min hadam, and they should take from the blood the nasnu al shtei hamizuzot, and they should put it on both of the doorposts, ba'al hamashkoth, and on the lintel, al habatim asher yachlu oso bahem, on the houses where they will eat the korban. Ba'achlu es habasar ba'layla hazeh, and you will eat the meat on that night. Sili eish umatzos, roast it over the fire with matzah. Al marorim yochluhu, and with bitter herbs you should eat it. Al tochlu mimenu.
Al tochlu mimenu na.
Don't eat it raw. Uvashal mubushal bamayim, or cooked in water. Ki imsli eish, but roasted. Rosho al pra'av al kirbo, its head, legs, and entrails over the fire.
Its head upon its legs and entrails. In other words, don't cut it up, but roast it all.
V'lo tosiru mimenu ad boker, and don't leave any over till the morning. V'hanasar mimenu ad boker v'esh tisrafu, and whatever's left till the morning, burn it in the fire. V'kacha tachlu oso masnechem. Oh wait, sorry.
Chagurim.
And so you should eat it, as it says here, your loins girded. Na'lechem beraglechem, sandals on your feet. And your staff in your hand, b'achaltem oso b'chipazon, you should eat it very quickly. Pesach hu l'Hashem. It's a Passover offering to God.
Great. Okay, you have the details. I'm going to read several psukim quickly, and then we'll shift over to Pesach Dorot. What we've read until now is Pesach Mitzrayim. Then we read, V'avarti b'eretz Mitzrayim b'layla hazeh, V'ipeti kolokol b'eretz Mitzrayim, Me'adam v'ad behema, V'chol Elohim Mitzrayim, Esa shvatim ani Hashem. I will pass through Egypt on this night, and I will smite all firstborn in the land of Egypt, from man to animal, and with all the gods of Egypt shall I make a judgment, I am God. והיה אדם לכם לאות הבתים אשר אתם שם, וראיתי את אדם, ופסחתי עליכם, לא יהיה לכם נגף ומשחית, והקוטי את ארץ מצרים. The blood will be for you as a sign upon the houses that you are there, and I will see the blood, and I will pass over you, and לא יהיה לכם נגף ומשחית. There will be no... Judy, you have a translation next to you, which seems to be great.
No plague will destroy you when I strike the Egyptians.
And then from here we go on to Pesach Dorot, Vayah Yom Hazeh Lachem Zikaron, etc. Now,
let me ask a practical question. How were they supposed to roast the whole goat or sheep indoors?
You know, I've thought of that also. First of all, how are they supposed to roast it? The Mishnah Pesachim tells you. You, in order to roast it, may the Mikdash be rebuilt, and may we have the opportunity to roast the Karban Pesach. What we'll be doing is taking a pomegranate branch and running it through the animal as a spit, and then turning the animal on the spit. The roasting could not have been done indoors. The roasting was done out of doors. But you're noticing something important, Nikki. The details of Pesach Mitzrayim and how they it differs from Pesach Dorot, from Pesach generations, are what? What are the differences that you've seen so far?
The blood.
First of all, the blood on the doorposts and the lintel. There's something else, and I'll get back to Nikki's question.
You don't bring it as a carbon in the temple, but you do it in your own home.
Oh, excellent, excellent, excellent. Now, the burning of the roasting of carbon had to be out in the yard. It couldn't have been in the house. But the reason that you're saying house is because
don't go out.
Because there's a mitzvah, and you're going to take a look ahead. Take a look at, just one second, we have to look at two groups of psukim. Look at Pasuk Kaf Aleph 21. Vayikra Moshe lechol zikei Yisrael vayomer lehem, mishchol kuchu lechem tzon mishchotechem v'shachatu b'pesach. Moshe summoned the elders of Israel and he said to them, draw and take to you sheep, or a sheep for your families, and slaughter the Pesach u'lekachem. You will immerse a bunch of hyssop in the blood, and you'll paint the lintel and the doorpost with the blood. And you will not go out of your homes until morning. Now, not going out of their homes begins when? It can't be that they're roasting this whole carbon inside of their home. It can't be. The homes would burn down. So where are they roasting it? Obviously, they're roasting it outside. But from the time they enter the house to be part of Pesach Mitzrayim, they may not go out until morning. And if you count the differences between Korban Pesach, the first Pesach Mitzrayim, Pesach Dorot, the first difference that occurs to you is Vayelchem Mishmeret. The Pesach Mitzrayim needed to be taken 4 days earlier on Yud Nisan, which is next Monday, a week from today, on the 10th of Nisan. And it needed to be guarded as Juni Retas. It needed to be guarded for 4 days. We don't have that law with Pesach Dorot. Just like a sukkah, when do you have to build your sukkah? The answer is you need a sukkah. It needs to be built for the sake of a sukkah, so you can't build it a half year in advance. You need to be built within the month of Sukkot. But there's no mitzvah of building the sukkah. The mitzvah is of dwelling in the sukkah. There's no mitzvah of taking a shofar. You need to blow a shofar. Likewise, you needn't bake your own matzah. You need to eat matzah. But the Korban Pesach, Pesach Mitzrayim, had a command that you needed to take it. And you needed to take it 4 days in advance. We don't have that in Pesach Dorot. The second thing is we don't have the painting of the blood on the lintel and the doorpost. There are two other details that you should be noticing. What else?
We don't eat roasted.
We don't what?
It's roasted versus we...
No, roasted. We still roast it.
Right, but we don't eat roasted.
We don't eat roasted today in memory of the Korban Pesach. But when we will bring the Korban Pesach, and when our forefathers brought the Korban Pesach, the only thing that they ate that night was roasted. Right. It was roasted.
They don't eat it any because after road they're not having their loins girded in there.
Perfect. And that is called chipazon. We don't have a mitzvah of chipazon for generations.
Well, some of the Sfardim do.
The Sfardim play act in a very lovely way. Yitziyat Mitzrayim. Is there anyone here who's Sfardi?
No, but my grandson, my son, my daughter.
So what did they do?
They put a sack on their back and they pretend they're leaving.
Yeah.
Ask the kids to do it too. They all pretend they're leaving.
You know, I just mentioned parenthetically that very often the in our culture, good morning, Evelyn.
Did I ever mold you out when you
were late? Did I ever come late to your class, Evelyn? I'm sure I did.
What is the parameters of people's life? Or are you going there?
I'm going there. Okay. But what Pipazon is about is you need to eat with your loins girded. What is eating with your loins girded? It's the opposite of what we do on Pesach Dorot. Pesach Dorot, there's a mitzvah of mesubin. The mitzvah of mesubin, we fulfill in the most bizarre fashion possible. Here, this is empty, so I can do this. Here we are, we're sitting and we're eating like this at our Seder tables. We're eating like this and we're trying not to spill the wine. We're not trying not to spill the wine on our clothing. It's the most uncomfortable way of eating one can imagine. And we have the matzah, which we're also, not just the wine, that we're drinking like this. But the matzah, excuse my back, but the matzah, we're also trying not to, especially Zecher and Mikdash Kehillah, not to soil our clothing as we're eating this way. Why would they sit in such a bizarre fashion? The answer is, it's not bizarre at all, if you'll forgive me. When you're sitting on rugs with cushions, you need to support yourself. So why are you going to support yourself with your left hand? So you can eat with your right hand. Also, Chazal say, Shema Yikadem Kanel Veshet, because you don't want the food to go down the windpipe instead of the esophagus. So you're eating this way, you have cushions, it's very comfortable, it's nice, I can sit this way for an hour. Not like sitting.
But I thought the windpipe esophagus idea has been discredited from a scientific point of view, that that's not correct.
That's possible, and the Gemara has a discussion about whether if someone is a lefty, they should be leaning on their right. So if the issue is simply the use of the hand and freeing up the hand, then they'll be leaning on the right. If the issue is the esophagus and the windpipe, then they would also be leaning. They would also be leaning on the left. But sitting with your loins girded is the opposite. What do you folks do as soon as you get home? Everyone has their favorite article of clothing that they remove when they get home. There's, sometimes it's an article of intimate apparel, and sometimes it's the shoes, and sometimes it's a hat, and sometimes it's a belt. But when you're sitting with your loins girded, you cannot be relaxing. You cannot be sitting mesubin. Sitting mesubin is... means that you're more or less going to be sitting erect. You're not going to be lounging with your loins girded. Your loins girded means you're ready to go, and you have to have your staff in your hand. So there's an opposite posture in Pesach Dorot from Pesach Mitzrayim. Now there's one. If you look at Pasuk 22, you see the mitzvah of Vakem lo ketzu ish mipetach beto ad boker. You shall not go out of your homes until morning. But look at Pesach Dorot. Look ahead to Perek Yudbet, Pasuk Mem Gimel, chapter 12, Pasuk 43. Vayor Hashem Moshe. This is after they have already gone out of Egypt. And now Hashem is once again repeating in greater detail the mitzvah of Pesach Dorot. Vayom Hashem Moshe Aaron, Zot Chukat HaPesach, Kol Ben Nechal Lo Yochal Bo. Hashem said to Moshe and Aaron, this is the law of Pesach, a member of a foreign people shall not eat of it. V'chol Eved Ish, Miknat Kesef, Umalta Oto, Az Yochal Bo. And any servant of a person who has been acquired by who has been purchased by money, if you circumcise him, he will then eat of it. Toshav sachir lo yochal bo. Someone who is a stranger dwelling in your land, or who is a sachir, will be here a guest worker, shall not eat of it. Now comes our pasuk. V'vayit echad yeyachel. In one house will it be eaten. Lo totziu min habayit min habasar chutza. You will not take out of the house the meat. V'etzem lo tishbarubo, and you will not break the bone in it. So what's the difference in the law of Pesach Mitzrayim and Pesach Dorot? In Pesach Mitzrayim, what is the prohibition? You're not allowed to do what? To leave the house. In Pesach Dorot?
The food can't leave
the house. You can leave the house, but the Korban Pesach cannot leave the house. Now I want to summarize this, and I want to raise a number of questions. We had Mishmeret, which I'm putting aside because it's not relevant to, it's relevant, of course, to Korban Pesach, but it's not relevant to this particular shiur. But if you look at what was taking place in the house on Pesach night, in Pesach Mitzrayim, you needed to eat b'chipazon with your loins, in haste, with your loins girded. In Pesach Dorot, we eat mesubin, we eat as royalty, spreading ourselves out on cushions. I want to comment parenthetically that in Israel a great deal has been coming to light, and more of us are having our Pesach Seders differently than we might have in our parents' homes, especially through the European tradition. More and more of us are dividing our Pesach Seder into two: the meal, which is eaten at the table, and before the meal, when you're sitting in the living room, on the rug, on cushions, mesubin, and telling the story.
Oh,
yeah.
At the table, you sit at the table. Is that because you're the number of people that started? The people, they just...
I don't know who started this. But I don't know who the first person who started this is. I heard of this from Rav Yoel Bin Nun, who teaches in
Mishmat. And where do you make Kiddush? I mean, how do you start the Seder?
You start, the answer is you have coffee tables the way they used to. When they would eat at a meal, when they had a festival, they didn't sit at a table like Chavi's table. They had tables of this sort that were scattered around the room, and that's the equivalent of our coffee table. And it's a way of putting emphasis on the fact that the first part of the Seder is not about eating. The first part of the Seder is about telling the story.
So, can I interject one historical note? The they that you're talking about are the Greeks, right?
Yes.
All right, so the they that sat on the floors with the tables and leaned back, it's the Greek symposium.
But right. What did they do with Egypt?
I don't know, but I just wanted to put that out. Right? The whole Seder is based on the model of the Greek symposium as it was. And so when we say they, as they did, it's... I was sitting here going, has anybody done research as to what they did?
As what our forefathers did.
I mean, we know what the Egyptians,
Egypt.
We presumably, somebody knows what the Egyptians did. I don't know.
Right.
But I do know that the model of the they
is the Greeks.
Is the Greeks.
Well,
the Greeks.
Well, you know,
when the Mishnah constructed the Seder, right? I mean, as
why is that a better model than what Eastern European Jews did?
No, it isn't, but that's what I'm... That's,
it's closer to the customs of the Seder that are mentioned in the Mishnah. And the reason that I mention it is because there's, especially as we tend to embrace more and more relatives who are not necessarily observant, or friends who are not necessarily observant, the fact of not sitting at a table conveys to everyone that the beginning of the Seder is not about eating. The beginning of the Seder is about something else. And I mention it because you may wish to, some people here, someone who's here, may wish to consider trying it. Now let's get back to Pesach Mitzrayim and Pesach Dorot. We said, I'm making the assumption, and Sharon is pointing out that I may or may not be wrong. I'm making the assumption that in Egypt as well, there was the possibility of lounging as distinct from the possibility of eating upright. But in any event, in Pesach Mitzrayim, they were sitting and eating with their loins girded. They were sitting and eating b'chipazon in haste. Point number one. Point number two is that in Pesach Mitzrayim, they were The blood was painted on the doorposts and the lintel, as distinct from the blood of our Korban Pesach, which is offered in the temple. The sacrifice itself is consumed in Jerusalem by families, by family groups, but the blood was in the temple. And this more or less makes us question, was the Pesach sacrifice in Egypt really a sacrifice? What makes it into a korban? What makes something into a korban is the offering of the blood in the mikdash. So in this case, it's not the blood that's offered in the mikdash, but painted on the doorpost. And the door, as a matter of fact, I think I brought this for you. Yes, take a look at source number 3. The Gemara of Sechim Tzadivav has Rav Yosef saying, Tana Rav Yosef, Rav Yosef says there were three altars there, the lintel and the doorpost. In other words, what made it into a korban is the sprinkling of the blood, but the sprinkling of the blood was not on the mizbeach and the mikdash, it was on the lintel and the doorpost. There are other differences between Pesach Mitzrayim and Pesach Dorot. They're mentioned in the Mishnah in number 2. Mabein Pesach Mitzrayim and Pesach Dorot. Pesach Mitzrayim mechachol v'asor. V'ta'un ha-za'av agudat ezov ha-ramashkol v'ashtei ha-mzuzot. V'ne'achal v'chifazon b'layla echad. V'Pesach Dorot nohei kol shiv'a. What's the difference between Pesach of Generations and Pesach Mitzrayim? Pesach Mitzrayim was taken on the 10th of the month. It needed sprinkling with a bunch of hyssop on the lintel and on the doorpost. It was eaten b'chipazon in haste, and Pesach Dorot is 7 days as distinct from 1 day. I add to that which we noticed, that in Pesach Mitzrayim they could not go out, and in Pesach Dorot they could go out, but they could not take the meat outside of the group that was eating.
And you had 7 days to eat it, did I understand?
Pesach Dorot is 7 days. Oh, okay. For 7 days we can't eat chametz. For 7 days we eat matzah. For one night they needed to eat matzah. That was all. Now, in context of what we just learned, I want to raise a bunch of questions. The first question that I'd like to raise is, if they can't go out all night, why are they needing to eat b'chipazon? Do you hear my question?
Yeah.
Why do they need to eat in haste if they're not going to be able to go out of their houses until morning?
It's not a celebratory meal.
Right.
You hear? There's something that's one would think they're eating in haste because in any moment they may be summoned to get up and to leave. But they have been told the opposite. Even if they're summoned to get up and leave, and that's in fact what happens, Paro summons them to get up and to leave, and they need to ignore that summons and to go out in the morning. So if so, what's the reason for the haste? That's my question number one. My question number two is, why are they eating matzah in Pesach Mitzrayim? Because we read, why do we eat matzah? Because their dough didn't ferment. Well, if their dough didn't ferment, so we commemorate that. But the night before their dough didn't ferment, they're already eating matzah. Why are they eating matzah in Pesach Mitzrayim? And I would also like to know why they could not go out. What was this stricture against going out, as distinct from our stricture against against taking the meat out? Yes.
I remember learning once that the Egyptians had beautiful breads. Their bakers were famous for their breads, but the Jews couldn't eat it because they were slaves, and they had to eat matzah. That was the bread of poor people. That was the bread of enslavement.
Matzah is called the bread of affliction, and I think it's called the bread of affliction because it's both prepared quickly And also, you can't tarry over eating matzah for a long time. You eat, you know, you can have fresh bread, and you have fresh bread giving off its fragrance of, you know, steaming in the middle of the table. You can eat it slowly. You can't do that with matzah. I had a student from Sri Lanka, and she was apparently from a wealthy Tamil family in Sri Lanka. And she told me that the servants would always eat in the kitchen, the women did as well, and they would eat standing up. They would not eat sitting down. But that's what the servants did. And if you think to yourself of eating of matzah, you think to yourself of eating something which you're going to finish fairly quickly. You're not going to tarry over it. If we didn't have a mitzvah matzah on Pesach, we wouldn't put matzah on a festive table. So you have a very good point there. Now let's start with the question of why couldn't they go out? And what I'm going to try to do is to find the key that's going to unlock all of our questions. Nikki,
one might think that if people are being killed at the point, you don't want to go out and see this, you know.
Nikki, why you do this all the time? Why do you give me my conclusion? You get it so quickly. Nikki just gave you the shield. We have to. But no, it's okay. We have to get there. So we're going to go through the sources and we're going to get to where Nikki got to. You just cut to the chase. Call her kavod to you. Okay. So let's start with source number 4. The Mishnah Pesachim Kuf Yutet says as follows: Ein maftirin achar haPesach afikuman. We do not follow the Pesach with Afikoman. If I asked everyone here, what's Afikoman? So you would all say, Afikoman is the matzah that we eat. Thank you. You would all say that Afikoman is the matzah that we eat at the end of the meal in commemoration of Karban Pesach. But that's not what the Mishnah says. The Mishnah says we do not, Afikoman is something you do not something you do, something you do not. We do not follow the Karban Pesach with Afikoman. The Gemara says, my Afikoman, and I gave you one of three views here. My Afikoman, Amar Rav Shelo Yachlu Me'achlu, Mechavura Lechavura. Afikoman represents going from one group to another group, and we do not do that. Afikoman is something you don't do. There's an alternative. Afikoman is something you don't, is something you would eat, and we don't eat that. Afikoman is dessert, and we don't eat dessert on Pesach, on the night of Karban Pesach. But Rav says it is that you do not proceed from group to group. And Rashbam, number 5, comments on that. Rashbam is a 12th century Rishon. He says, "Achar shachlu haPesach b'chavura, lo yechlu b'chavura acheret lechol lo pat v'lo shum davar gezera dilma ati l'mechal et haPesach b'shnei mekolot." After they ate the Pesach in a group, let them not go to another group to eat not a piece of bread and not anything else, lest they eat the Karban Pesach in two places. A Karban Pesach cannot be eaten in two places. And there's, by the way, a very, very interesting law in the Mishnah. I think the law hasn't made its way to Beit Shemesh, but it's a law in the Mishnah that says as follows, that when you're eating the Karban Pesach, there needs to be eye contact between all the people in the Chavura. There's only one exception of the person who's allowed to break eye contact, and that's the bride in her first year of marriage, if she is bashful, and if she is eating at her father-in-law's table or her father-in-law's rug, she is not obligated. She's permitted to turn her face away. But otherwise, everybody, and that's the men and the women in the group, everybody has to have eye contacts between them. Maybe in Beit Shemesh they'll organize women's groups and men's groups. I don't know. That's the Mishnah in Pesachim. Yeah, they're all eating. You're eating, and it says that the one who is permitted not to look is the bride. Not that she's obligated not to look, but if she's bashful, she's allowed to look aside. But otherwise, everybody is obligated to sit and to be able to see each other in this group that's eating the Korban Pesach together, and you are not permitted to take the meat from one group to another group. You are a member of one group and not of another group.
It also means, I guess, the woman can't be in the kitchen.
You're here. When she is eating the Korban Pesach, because the Mishnah speaks about a shamash, the Mishnah speaks about a servant who is serving. But the shamash who is eating the Korban Pesach cannot eat it in the kitchen. He must eat it together with his group. Okay. Now, why was it, as distinct from this practical law, that for generations, you're not permitted to take the meat outside? And that is logical, because if you could take the meat outside, you might become confused and eat meat in a different grouping. And each, this is the basis for community organization. The Jews needed to organize themselves into groups, and every single Jew needed to be counted as part of some group, and he, she could decide what group they wished to join, but everybody is counted in a group. As distinct from that, Pesach Mitzrayim, you could not go outside. And I point out again, there is, I call into question why they're eating with their loins girded if they're not going to be able to go outside until morning. And Wendy says, so as not to have a festive meal. Let's read. Let's start with source number 7. 7 is the Tanchuma. Midrash Tanchuma says as follows. Vayikra Moshe l'Aaron laila vayomer kumu tzu'u. He summoned, Paro summoned Moshe and Aaron at night, and he said, arise, go out. Amar le Moshe, kach tzivanu HaKadosh Baruch Hu, v'atem lo tetzu ish mipetach beito ad bokir. Moshe answered, actually I'll read the whole thing and then I'll translate. V'chi ganavim anachnu sh'neitzei b'layla, lo neitzei ela b'yad rama, le'enei kol Mitzrayim. Paro summoned Moshe and Aaron at night, saying, arise, go out. Moshe said, thus God commanded us, you shall not go out of your homes until morning. Are we thieves that we will sneak out at night? We will go out with a biyad gama, with a raised arm, by before the eyes of all Egypt. And then we go on reading in the next siman, Vayakam Paro Laila, Hayam Lech V'Korei B'Laila V'Chol Shuk V'Shuk V'Omer Heichan Moshe V'Heichan Hudar. Amar Lei Paro, Kumu Tzu Mitoch Ami. Amar Lo Moshe V'Chiga Navimano. הקדוש ברוך הוא אמר לא תצאו איש מפתח ביתו עד בוקר. אמר לי פרעה, בבקשה ממך, קומו צאו. אמר לי משה, למה אתה מטריח הרבה? אמר לי שאני בכור ומתיירא אני שם האמור. אמר לי אל תתיירא מן הדבר, לגדולה מזו אתה מתוקן. פרעה was walking through the markets of Egypt and saying, where does Moshe live? Where does Moshe live? Because Moshe could not go out at night. So when he wants Moshe, he needs to find him. Paro said to him, in other words, once he found Moshe's house, Paro said to him, arise and go out for my people. Moshe said, are we thieves that we will go out under the darkness of the night? God told us not to go out from the entrance to the house until morning. Paro said, please go out. Moshe said, why are you entreating me so much? Paro said, because I'm a firstborn and I'm fearful that I will die. Moshe said, don't worry, God has a greater destiny in mind for you. So according to the Tanhuma, why did God tell them to stay in their homes until morning?
So it should appear that they're sneaking out.
And so that we should not internalize the sense of having fled from Egypt, but rather having with dignity left Egypt, that we could not have left Egypt with dignity at night. That's the Tanhuma. It's going to take us several centuries to get to, it's going to take us about 1,000 years to get from the Tanhuma to Abarbanel, who is going to be who is going to go in the direction that Nikki did. Now, as distinct from that, you have the Gemara in Bava Kama, source number 8. The Gemara in Bava Kama says, Tani Rav Yosef. מה דכתיב ואתם לא תצאו איש מפתח ביתו עד בוקר? כיוון שניתן פשוט למשחית, אינו מבחין בין צדיקים לרשעים. רב יוסף said, what is the reason for you shall not go out of your home until morning? Since permission has been given to the משחית, I would translate as destroying angel. Since the destroying angel has been given permission to destroy, he does not distinguish between the righteous and the wicked. According to this understanding, why could they not go out? It was dangerous, and therefore they could not go into the street. And I would probably add to the destroying angel, the Egyptians themselves, who might have, had they seen an individual Jew here and there, might have move towards a lynching. So, in order to prevent danger, they need to stay in Chavi.
I also think that there's a spiritual component to it, meaning you're trying to form a nation. So, if the slaves went out, they see all this killing, all this murder, basically from their perspective, it's going to impact their spiritual growth. They're going to be, the last thing in their head is going to be
revenge.
Yeah, and I just think that it's the formation of them from an existential perspective.
Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely.
And then they saw all those Mitzrayim being killed at Yam Suf in plain daylight.
Yeah. But you know, there's a difference, because at Yam Suf, what were they doing? They were busy crossing Yam Suf. In other words, they had what to do. They were not spectators. It's true that there was a battle, and in this battle, Milchemet Hashem b'Mitzrayim, Hashem Yishmilchama Hashem Yishmor, there was a battle, and they witnessed people being losing their lives in battle. But it's not the same thing as being with spectators. And Chavi and Nikki are in the same place, and we'll get there shortly.
I have
but
a question.
Yes.
So, it says that God himself goes through and does the killing at one point.
Correct.
But then it keeps referring to the destroyer let loose.
Kol hakavod to you. So what Chazal say is that God himself is there in Egypt, passing through the streets, and the destroying angel is with him. And it is God who appoints the destroying angel, not the destroying angel, who makes his decisions, but God is there, and the destroying angel is the equivalent of the hand that would go out, or the sword. Someone may murder someone by means, or let's take a better example. Someone may assist someone. The destroying angel is the agent. Yeah. So what have we had so far? We've had two reasons to stay inside. One of which is we stay inside because we're not going to exit without dignity. We're going to leave as a dignified people the following morning. And I would add to that, Moshe and Aaron are saying to Paro, it's not you who is going to determine the moment of the exodus from Egypt. It's God who's going to determine the moment of the exodus. And we are no longer slaves to you, and you cannot give us the order of when to go out. We'll go out when we're ready to go out. And the alternative that we've read from Baba Kama is that it's dangerous to be outside and therefore they should stay inside. There's a third view that goes to Ramban. We've now come into the Middle Ages. And Ramban says as follows. The reason, intent was to say that the text warned Israel in Egypt not to go out of their homes that night because God was passing through Egypt, like a king who was passing from place to place, and what would you call the attendants who walk before the king? Not the scouts, but the
bodyguards.
They're not bodyguards. They're his honor guard. His honor guard is before him, so that no one will look upon him. In other words, you see the honor guard coming, and then you know you should avert your eyes, and it's the king who is coming. And then there are several psukim. You may remember from the beginning of Parshat, from the end of Parshat Bamidbar, that when the Mishkan was dismantled, the Kohanim needed to go in first in order to cover the vessels before the Levim could come in order to carry the vessels. And we're told, that they will not come in to see when the holy vessels are exposed and they will die. There is a tradition of not looking when the Shekhinah is there. What happens when Moshe first sees the burning bush? What does he do? He averts his eyes. God tells Moshe, when Moshe asks to see him, you can see my rear, but you cannot see my face. Man cannot see me and live. So far you've had three views. One is that we will not leave Egypt like thieves under the cover of darkness. We will leave when God tells us, not when Paro commands us to leave. The second was, we cannot go out because it's dangerous to go out. For whatever reason, however we explain the danger. The third was, we cannot go out because the Shekhinah is out there and in this mystical view, the Shekhinah is in the streets, and it would not be appropriate for us to look in the streets. Then we get to Abarbanel. We've now arrived in the 15th century. And number 10, Abarbanel points out something very interesting and makes a fascinating connection. He says as follows. Hahei, he was talking about the fifth answer. Siva shelo yotiru mimenu ad boker. God commanded not to leave the Korban Pesach until the morning. And if it is left, it should be burned. Pesach is more stringent than any other sacrifice because all of the sacrifices can be consumed at the very least for one full day and the following night. And the Pesach is only for one night. Its reason becomes clear afterwards. The Torah prohibited the remains to the morning. Because the purpose of the Pesach was that it should be finished before the beginning of Makat Bechorot. And I think that this puts into perspective, this is the key that's going to enable us to answer all of our questions. First of all, we asked, why were they eating matzah that night? The answer is the bread of haste. Matzah is not the bread over which you tarry. matzah is the bread of haste. Can you think of somewhere else in the Torah where someone served matzah? Not Lavan, but you're very close, Sharon. Sarah did not make matzot. Sarah made shlosh seim kemach solet lufji va'afi ugot. She made cakes. She did not make matzot. But who made matzot? You have it. Lot made matzah. And Lot made matzah. Lot made matzah. We'll look at Lot in just a minute. Lot made matzah for because matzah is something which is consumed quickly. Think to yourself of everything about Karban Pesach. Why do they need to eat with their loins girded if they can't go out anyway? Why is there a mitzvah of chipazon if they can't go out until morning? So the answer is the mitzvah of chipazon doesn't have to do directly with the exodus from Egypt. That's one way of reading it. I mean, it has to do with finishing the meal quickly. It has to do with finishing the meal quickly. I just want to give you an alternative. Did I bring this? Yes. Look at number 13. I just want to give you an alternative reading before I give you my reading. Tzidkat HaTzadik, which is the Tzadok HaKoyin of Lublin, says as follows. Reishit knisat ha'adam la'avodat Hashem tzarek liyot b'chipazon. K'mo shematzinu b'petzach mitzrayim sh'aya ne'achav b'chipazon v'lo pesach dorot. Mipnei sh'atchala שההתחלה לנתק עצמו מכל תאוות העולם הזה שהוא מקושר בהם צריך לשמור הרגע שמתעורר בו הרצון רצון השם ולהחפוז על אותו רגע למהר לצאת מהם אולי יוכל ואחר כך שוב ילך במתינות ולאט כדין פסח דורון. It's a marvelous, marvelous comment of Rav Tzadok. Rav Tzadok says that sometimes in life there are decisions which can only be made quickly. You can't peel off that band-aid slowly or you're not going to end up doing it. There are times when you need to make a break, when you need to summon the strength, and you need to make that decision immediately. Otherwise, the decision's not going to be made. If you're going to be debating over it for too long, you are not going to be able to make that decision. And for that reason, for Pesach Mitzrayim, when you're making a decision of accepting upon yourself a new faith, you need to do it in one fell swoop, and then you can return to a more measured religious life afterwards. That's what Rav Tzadok says, and it's a wonderful statement. It's a really wonderful statement. And I think that's true of many, many life's decisions, that we don't have a choice. We can only, you get to some points in life where you just gotta jump into the water and make that decision, otherwise you're not gonna make the decision.
Why can't you say that that's the decision to have to leave? In other words,
yes, exactly. Exactly.
Not leave this room.
Exactly. So. What Reb Tzadok is saying is that the decision to leave Egypt, that the Reb Tzadok is saying that eating b'chipazon in Egypt was because the decision to leave Egypt demanded chipazon. It demanded the strength, the resolve of a moment to go into a an unknown future. And therefore, it needed to be done quickly. And therefore, they were eating, he doesn't say this directly, but this is his implication, they were eating b'chipazon, even though they didn't need b'chipazon. They had until morning because they couldn't go out. So why were they eating b'chipazon? Because they needed to get themselves into a mindset of chipazon, otherwise they would not have left Egypt. But I wish to suggest something else. I wish to suggest that everything about this evening is saying chipazon. Look at the menu. The menu is matzah. Why are they eating matzah that night? They don't have to eat matzah that night. They could be eating bread that night. They have a whole night. The answer is, if the notion is, as Abarbanella is saying, to finish the Karban Pesach before midnight, when Makat Bechorot is going to take place, then you want to eat b'chipazon. Then you want to have matzah because that's one way of making sure that the meal is going to be completed quickly. Go on to all the other things that we read. All of Israel is going to slaughter the Karban Pesach at the same time. They're all going to roast the Korban Pesach. We're not going to start grinding it up, making meat patties. We're not going to make the stew. We're not going to have... No, we're not going to cut it into steaks. We're not... That's going to take time. But what do? We roast it all unspit, all in one. Rosho al-Kirav al-Kirbo. What's the menu for the night? The menu for the night is written in the Torah. It's matzot, al-matzot, u'morim. You don't have side dishes. The vegetable that you're having is maror. You're having maror and you're having matzah. The whole menu is there. You're not having an appetizer. You're not having an abundance of side dishes. You're not having dessert. What's going to be the result of all of this? The result of all of this, and on top of that, you're sitting with your loins girded. The result of this is you're going to be finishing quickly. In order to understand it and to get to where Nikki was, I think if we look at one other biblical episode, that is very similar, we find similar elements. There's another night within the Bible that has this combination of destruction to one group and deliverance to another group. That's what you have in Egypt. You have destruction for one group and deliverance for another group. The Jews are redeemed at the same time as the Egyptians are smitten. Where else do you have that?
Stone.
You have that in stone.
Sancheirah, when they're all defeated? Kind of like it?
Well...
But some of them.
Sancheirah has them being defeated at night, but yeah, that's also deliverance. You're right. I have to ponder that. Go back to stone for a moment and take a look at the common elements of the story. And you'll see a lot of common elements. Open up into Bereishit, chapter 19. Read for yourselves. We're not going to read this out loud. Bereishit chapter 19. Perek Yutet. Vayavor shnei halachim stoma ba'erev, v'lot yoshev b'shar stom, v'yaglot v'yacham nikratam, v'yishtachu apayim arzo, v'yomer hinyena adonai surunai bait avtechem, v'linu v'rach atzurek lechem, וישכמתם והלכתם לדרככם, ויום הם לא עובר, חוב נלי. ויפצר במהו ויסורו אלו ויבואו אל ביתו, ויעש להם משתה, ומצות עפה ויוכלו. טרם ישכבו, ואנשי העיר, אנשי סדום, נסבו על הבית, מנער ועד זקן, כל העם מתעצר. ויקראו אלו ויאמרו לו, אי האנשים אשר באו אליך הלילה, הוציאה מלינו נדע אותם. ויצא עליהם לא תפתך, והדלת סגר אחריו. ויאמר, אל נחי, תראו, הננה לי שתי בנות, etc., etc. Pasuk Tet 9, Vayomru Geshala, Vayomru Hechat Balagru, Vayishpot Shafot, Atana Ralachamehim, Vayifzuru Vayishbalot Mo, Vayishu Vishbor Hadalet, Vayishlahu Hanashimet Yadam, Vayavimet Lot Vanashimalim, Baitavet Hadalet Sagaru, Vet Hanashima Shepetah Habaiti Kubasan Ferim, Gadovat Katanvat Gadova, Yelunim Soha Petah. And then the angels tell Lot to leave. I'm going to translate in English in a minute. Pasuk Tetvav. Uchmo ha-shachar alav ha-yeitzu ha-malachim b'lot le'mor. Kum kach et ishtecha ve'et shtei minotecha nimtzaot ken tisafe b'avon ha'ir. Va'yitmama. Va'yachzigu anshi b'yado v'yad ishto v'yad shtei minotav. וחמלת השם עליו, ויוציאו וינלכו מחוץ לעיר. ויהי כהוציאם אותם החוצה, ויאמר הימלאת נפשך, אל תביט אחריך, ואל תעמוד בכל הכיכר ההר, הימלא פן תיספר. ויאמר לוט עליהם, אל נא אדוני, etc., etc. Just one second, one more פסוק. פסוק 26, כ"ו. Does someone have the English in front of him? They can read it quickly?
Yeah.
Okay. Who said yes?
Yeah.
I can read.
Okay, great.
Yitzhak, right?
Yes.
Two angels came to Sodom in the evening, and Lot was sitting at the gate of Sodom. Now Lot saw and stood up to meet him, and he bowed face to the ground. And he said, "Behold, now, my lords, turn about, please, to your servant's house. Spend the night and wash your feet, then wake up early and go your way." And they said, "No, rather we will spend the night in the square." And he urged them very much, so they turned toward him, and they came to his house and made a feast for them and baked matzah, and they ate. They had not yet lain down when the townspeople, Sodomites, converged upon the house from young to old, all the people from every quarter. And they called to Lot and said to him, "Where are the men who came to you tonight? Bring them out to us that we may know them." Lot went out to the entrance and shut the door behind him, and he said, "I beg you, my brothers, do not act wickedly. See now, I have two daughters who have never known a man. I shall bring them out to you, and do as to them as you please. But to these men do nothing, inasmuch as they have come under the shelter of my God." And they said, "Stand back." Then they said, "This fellow came to sojourn and would act as a judge. Now we will treat you worse than them." They pressed exceedingly upon the man, then upon Lot, and they approached to break the door. The men stretched.
Now skip to Pasuk 16.
Still he lingered. So the men grasped.
Right, Mahamah. Go ahead.
Yeah. Still he lingered, so the men grasped him by his hand, his wife's hand, and the hand of his two daughters, in Hashem's mercy on him, and they took him out and left him outside the city. And it was as they took them out that one said, "Flee for your life. Do not look behind you, nor stop anywhere in all the plain. Flee to the mountain, lest you be swept away."
Okay, I think that's enough. What common elements do you see in the story? Yes.
Don't look at the destruction.
So first of all, you have a night which combines deliverance for some and destruction for others. Number two, you have a command not to look you don't have a command in Egypt not to look at the destruction, but you have a command not to go out of the house. You have a command in stone not to look at the destruction. What else?
The hesitation part.
Yes. Vayit ma'amai, what do we say? V'lo yachnu li'it ma'amai, v'gam seydah lo asulehim. They could not tarry. They tarried, and the angel stopped them from tarrying. This is not a night for tarrying. And
but the sons of Lot tarried and stayed.
And they were...
Right, so
those who tarried were not redeemed. Right. They could not tarry. Okay. And then you also look at the menu. Why did Lot make matzah? The answer was because of chipazon, his desire to finish the meal quickly. So the menu is the same. And one more item, which is...
The closing of the door?
Yes. Good, Chavi. Good. There's action that takes place around the door. In both cases, there's action that takes place around the door. And I would have recourse to one more biblical episode. I'm going to try to shed light on all of this. There's another situation of destruction in the Torah, which couples destruction with redemption. These are saved and these are destroyed. And that's, of course,
Noah.
That's, of course, the flood. Now, the Teva, the ark, had what's called a tzohar, a window. The tzohar, what was it made of? There's a machloket. Take a look at this. Yes. Take a look at number 14. Midrash Rabba Kan, the Tosefet Bracha. Tosefet Bracha is the author of the Torah Tmima, Rabbi Baruch Halevi Epstein, who wrote a less well-known work called the Tosefet Bracha. And he points out something very interesting. He says, Midrash Rabba Kan, Rabbi Yudah v'Rabbi Nechemia, Chadamar Tzohar Kanon, V'chadamar Tzohar Avanim Tovot Amar Galiyot. There's a machloket in Midrash Rabbah what this tzohar window was made of. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemia are the people who have the machloket. One says that tzohar is a window, and one says that tzohar is precious stones which emit light. Now, what's the difference between the two?
You can see through the window.
You can see out the window. The Tosefet Bracha noted something fascinating. The same two people who have the controversy about whether the Tzohar was a window or precious gems also have a controversy about whether Noah was a perfect tzaddik or a limited tzaddik. And he who holds that the Tzohar was a window also holds that Noah was a perfect tzaddik. And he who holds that the Zohar was precious gems, he's just connecting something from different places, and he's saying, take a look. He's, the Tosefta Brachah is a detailed person, and he's noted fascinating details that the same two people who are on both sides of this machloket are on both sides of that machloket. He who holds that the Zohar is a window also holds that Noah was a perfect tzaddik. He who holds that the Zohar was precious gems also holds that Noah was not a perfect tzaddik. He was a tzaddik in relation to his times. So look what he writes. He writes, "V'avdel shebein hamorot habayim al dech halom regi v'avdel avanim avikot malvayon." But Wendy said, the difference between precious gems and the window is that you can see out the window and not so with precious gems. The same Chachamim who differ here regarding the name Zohar differ above regarding the language in his he was a tzaddik in his generations. One said in his generations for praise, and the other said in his generations it's a derogatory comment. Thank you. It's a derogatory comment. Ya'an ki tzaddik gamor yesh lo zechut kfula. A perfect tzaddik has a double privilege. Ha'achat lehinatzel ba'atzmo mitoch ha'sakana, v'ashniya od lera'ot ba'ovdan ha'rasha'im ve'oto asom. The first is himself, thank you. Himself to be redeemed in that from that danger, and the second to see the demise of the evildoers in that same catastrophe. About tzaddik she'eino gamor, but a righteous person. We're not talking about non-righteous, a righteous person, but who's not perfect. Daya lo hazchut l'inatzel b'atzmo. It's enough for him to be saved by himself. Can someone explain to me what the Tosefet Brachah is saying? If he's a perfect tzaddik, it's a window. Because then he could see the demise of the Rishayim. If he's not a perfect tzaddik, it's precious gems. Because then he'll still be saved, he'll still have light in the teva, but he's not going to be able to see outside. What's the big difference? What's the difference? Why should a perfect tzaddik be able to see what someone who is still a righteous person, but not on that level, should not be able to see?
Meaning the future, you're looking into the future, what you're developing, what you're saving for great future, and which the other one is only thinking of the moment for himself.
There's something that's potentially deeply corrupting at watching even the demise even of evildoers. There's a concept in Hebrew that we call simcha la'ed, rejoicing over the
rejoicing over someone's destruction.
Yes. And there's something that's potentially corrupting about that. It's what we're being told here is be satisfied at your own redemption. That it takes someone who is of absolutely perfect moral fiber to be able to witness the death of a foe without himself dropping to the level of feeling a sense of satisfaction, gloating over the catastrophe of his foe.
Where do we get the gloating part here? I don't see the gloating.
I think that's the idea of Noach, that we're being told if Noah was a perfect tzaddik, so it was a window, because he wouldn't have been corrupted by seeing. He wouldn't have been corrupted by seeing evildoers die. There's a kind of arrogance that can easily result when, you know, you see others, you see lesser mortals being punished, and so you say
he's seeing the drowning and then the
yeah.
Okay. But isn't bread also associated with arrogance? Isn't that the nature of whatever?
Yes. Yes.
Consider arrogance. Yes. Matzah.
Versus matzah, which is humble and absolutely. So, Nikki?
Another interesting thing might be with the story of Noah. If I remember correctly, it was God himself who closed the door, right? So he, in other words, by closing the door, he's saying, you know, the same thing, forgetting the window, just, you know, that's it.
You will be
don't
saved.
Go out. No, also don't go out.
But don't go out. Don't go out. Don't take a look. So let me pull together everything that I said. Let me review. We started out with the question of why did they eat matzah in Egypt before they were redeemed from Egypt, if our eating of matzah commemorates an act that still has not taken place on their part at the time of the Exodus. We answered that question by suggesting that they were eating matzah in Egypt as part of a meal of haste. And we asked ourselves, why did they need to gird their loins in Egypt if they were going to go out only the next morning and they couldn't go out of the house? And we answered, the girding their loins is part of eating in haste. We then looked at the meal and we said, this meal is a meal which is eaten in haste. We asked the question, why for Pesach Dorot they can't take the meat out, but why for Pesach Mitzrayim they couldn't go out? So we gave four approaches. We said, well, Ramban says they could not go out because the Shechina is outside. The Tanchuma says they could not go out because they're not going to steal out of Egypt as thieves. The Gemara in Bava Kamma says they could not go out because it was dangerous to go out because of the Mashchit. But I tried to suggest by putting all these pieces together that there was an additional moral dimension that they could not go out, and not going out had to do with not witnessing the demise of their enemies. And then we compared stone, the destruction of stone, to the exodus from Egypt, and we saw the common elements that the, in both cases, matzah is eaten. On both cases, lo yachlu nitmameya, they were not permitted to tarry. In both cases, the door has a central role, and in both cases, these are saved and these are redeemed. And we saw that in the case of Lot, there was a stricture against looking back. Why are they permitted not to look back? So you can give many reasons. You could say they're not looking back because they're not supposed to, they're supposed to sever themselves immediately from their past. But you could say they're not looking back. Because God does not wish us, even when God is letting out judgment to those who deserve judgment, God does not wish us to witness it. And when Lot's wife looked back, she took her place amongst them. They needed not to look back. And if we then have recourse to the Tosefet Bracha on Noach, we say that there's a corrupting element to gloating over the demise of your enemy, and that during Kriyat Yamsuf, the Jew had what to do. He was occupied. He was passing through Yamsuf. As distinct from in Egypt, where the Jew did not have what to do.
But maybe I was thinking that, like in Parshas B'Shalach, the Jews passing Yom Tov, they're at a different level. They've seen everything that happened because they were able to say Shira. You know, they actually saw the bodies of the Egyptians being thrown on the. You know, it may be that they were at the level of the tzaddik more like the Tzaddik Gomer. You were saying the Tzaddik Gomer could see the destruction.
I don't know that the Jews behaved like Tzaddikim Gomerim.
They did say the Shira.
They did. God kept the angels from saying Shira. To me, it seems like at the time of the splitting of Yam Suf, there's a practical side to seeing the Egyptian drown. One needs to understand the Egyptians are no longer pursuing us. But Makat Chorod is something else. Makat Chorod is just watching the Egyptians being punished for the sake of punishment. Watching the pain, the grief of people, the cries of people. You have the Jews in Egypt finishing eating Karman Pesach before Chatzot, so that you don't hear at the same time the festive meal. I get back to what Wendy said about a meal with reclining is a festive meal. And so that you don't hear the sounds of festivity and the sounds of anguish at the same time. And I wish to suggest, as we go into Pesach, that there is a message here of the Jew and his neshama, and how the Jew should be looking at humanity, and how the Jew should be looking at himself. So I want to wish everyone a redemptive Seder. I hope you enjoyed a look at this particular aspect of Yitzhak, and I thank Chani again for opening for and for having so much chametz on the table.
You better eat a lot.
I got together with Rabbi Ross. The question is, did you say anything to Ramban or Ramban about the Hashkacha Pratim?
I said Ramban.
With a note.
Yeah.
That's what I thought. And he says he didn't know when.